Well, Deuteronomy 24, very, very familiar to many of us. Even if you've never read it, you've heard Jesus mention it. First of all, what I want to let you know as we take a look at chapter 24 is it's not very long. I can always drag anything out, though. Don't worry. People-to-people relationships. Now, you know, we've talked about relationships, our relationship with the Lord. Now, you notice that we're kind of dealing people-to-people. Those are hard to deal with sometimes. And what we're going to see in chapter 24, a main theme running through chapter 24, people with people, is mercy. Mercy should be shown to people. Now, I didn't say that they deserve it. We don't deserve mercy. None of us wants to really talk about what we deserve. But we want to show mercy to people. God is full of mercy. His compassions never fail, Leviticus chapter 3 tells us. I'm sorry, Lamentations chapter 3. I'll be fine. His mercies, his compassions don't ever fail. They are new every morning. And then, of course, the word goes on to say, great is thy faithfulness. God is merciful to me. He is merciful to you. I know that he is because you're still semi-upright here tonight. That's how merciful he is to you. If he gave to you and to me what we earned just this week alone, believe me when I tell you and I would not be here. You say, oh, I've been good. Yeah, right. And you got a pride problem along with everything else that happened this week. No, there was none good, no, not one. Not even me and you. And God is so filled with mercy that he forgives and forgives and goes on and on and on, and his compassions never fail. And he wants us, he wants me and you to be the same way as he is. Jesus said, if any man will, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Not only does that mean come after me, but it means imitate me. God is merciful. He forgives, and now you and I are his, and so we should be merciful. And that's what you're going to see through chapter 24. Question. Don't answer it out loud. Are you merciful? Have you ever even thought about it? We ask this question, am I merciful? You know, and then of course, we like to go ahead and read the first verse and forget that question. When a man has taken a wife, married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, because he has found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her away. Send her out of his house. And when she is gone, when she's departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. Verse 3 says, if the latter, the last husband, hates her, doesn't like her anymore, and writes her a bill of divorcement and gives it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies and she becomes a widow, which took her to be his wife, then verse 4 says, her former husband, or the first guy, or the one before this one, depending upon numbers, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. After that, she is defiled. For that is abomination before the Lord. You shall not cause the land to sin, which the Lord thy God gives you for an inheritance. Whew. Got it? We'll go on then. We're going into the promised land. That's what Deuteronomy is all about. It's this hot water. Well, Luke hot. It's not really, it's kind of cold. Not helping at all. Anyway, we're going into the promised land. It's all kinds of things we're talking about before we go in. Well, Moses can't go. So we want to make sure we're prepared in every way. How to deal with God, how to deal with each other. And we're going into the promised land. So, you get into the promised land. Divorce in that part of the country, in that part of the world, at that time was widespread. Can you imagine? I mean, it was rampant. And so, Israel was going on in there, and Moses figures that these people are pretty stubborn. Now, he has spent the last 40 years with them, you remember? And they were pretty hard-hearted, weren't they? Not like us, but I mean, these guys were stubborn. So he says, now when you get in there, you're going to run into troubles, and one of the things is going to be divorce. It's going to happen. What it does, you got to understand it's just rampant out there. Divorce here, as you notice, is seen as a tragedy. Not anymore in our culture, but right here it's seen as a tragedy, a real bad problem. But it's going to happen. And as a matter of fact, if you've read through Scripture, throughout the Word of God, divorce is seen as a tragedy. I'll read to you Malachi, very, very often quoted. Malachi chapter 2, verse 16. For the Lord, the God of Israel, says that He hates putting away, which is called divorce. For one covers violence with his garment, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore, take heed to your spirit that you deal not treacherously. So God gives you His opinion of the whole idea. He hates putting away. God hates that. But because it's so rampant in the culture, you've got to protect people. God allowed Moses to give them these commandments to protect people. This is done to show mercy to people. Isn't that interesting? The writing of a divorcement, which is what you read here in the first four verses, was given to the woman so that she could have something in writing in her hand. Why? Right, because if she walked out there, was married yesterday, isn't married today, and got nothing to show a good reason, what would they do to her? Stone her to death, that's right. And so, to show mercy to this woman, then the husband would write her a writing of divorcement, give it to her in her hand. It's hers now to keep. She keeps that paper. So that in case things get ugly, she goes, no, I'm legal, everything's cool, it don't kill me. Now, here we read, kind of interesting too, I don't understand it. We read this. In verse 1, when a man had taken a wife and married her, come to pass, she find no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her. I don't know what that means. I know what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean adultery. How do I know? Because that law's already been covered. If she would have committed adultery, she would be what? Stoned to death. So it doesn't mean adultery. Doesn't mean having sexual relations before you're married. How do I know? Because God doing that, what happens to you? Stoned to death. Yeah, see, we're covered. So what kind of uncleanness did he find in this woman that caused him to write her this writing of divorcement? Well, nobody quite knows. Nobody knows. So the Pharisees, the doctors of the law, scribes, they came up with what they figured was indecent. The uncleanness could also be translated indecent. I find something indecent in her. For instance, they say you could divorce her if she burned food. That would be indecent. How many of you would still be married today? Stick with me. We warm up those Fruit Loops in the microwave. We're fine, remember. But another thing that the Pharisees, the doctors of the law, the scribes, another thing they called indecent was she got old and wasn't as attractive as she used to be. That's very indecent of her, and so you could dump her. Or if she didn't get old, maybe you've only been married a few years, but you see somebody more attractive and younger, and then you look at her and that's indecent. So you let her go. Or you find somebody who's smarter. And you think, that girl's really smart. You, I don't know, writing divorcement, that's indecent. Nobody quite knows what indecent is, so they started making up all kinds of things that indecent was. But they missed the point, which is obvious. See, this was given to prevent divorce for foolish reasons like dinner or age or weight or height or hair color or no hair or whatever. And it was also, notice, because we read the first four verses, it was also designed to prevent simply trading partners for a while. And okay, let this one go. She marries you for 3 or 4 years, and then she can come on back. No, see, this is designed to make sure we don't start swapping and sharing, which God would not approve of at all. So these things here were given to the people to help. Did it help? No, my goodness, these people were a mess. Now, in Matthew chapter 19, I'm going to start in verse 3. The Pharisees came to Jesus, testing him, tempting him. And they said unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Another, in our language, any cause. For any reason. Verse 4, and he answered, Jesus answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more two, but one. What therefore God has joined together, let not man divide. Then they said unto him, ah, we gotcha. Because in Deuteronomy chapter 24, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and put her away? Everybody, you've had that done to you, haven't you? Someone come up to you and ask you a question and you'll answer the question and go, oh, well, wait, you know, it says back here in Leviticus. Have you had that happen to you yet? No? Well, get with it. Happens to me about every 30 minutes around here. You know, you got to be fast in the restroom. Who's in there? That's Bob. Hey, I got a question for you. Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement, to put her away? They think they got Jesus, don't they? What is the answer? He saith unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, allowed you to divorce your wives, put them away. But from the beginning, it was not so. That was never what God himself had planned. And I say to you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for sexual sin, and shall marry another, commits adultery. And whoso marrieth her, which is put away, does commit adultery. So he says, he gives us here the one reason where divorce could be permitted. Not commanded, but permitted. Do you see that? Sexual sin. Why was this even done in the first place? To protect these women. We've come a long way. Now women can divorce too. And so you see the women dumping theirs, just as the men dumping theirs. Now everybody's doing it. And it's really hard to find anymore someone who hasn't been touched by it, isn't it? When it runs rampant in a society. And Jesus says that's not the way God had it from the beginning. Well, then why did Moses even write it down? Because of the hardness of the hearts of people. Because you see, the hardness of the hearts of people. Now, get this in your head. Mercy. Can you imagine if there was no way for this guy and this girl to deal with the fact that they are about to eat each other alive? Can you imagine? We see it in our society. The beatings, the violence, shooting the children, shooting themselves, shooting the wives, shooting the neighbors, shooting the walls. I mean, can you imagine how ugly it would get because of the hardness of the hearts of people? Yes, you can, because we basically see it in the news, don't we? How vicious people are getting. And that's because of the hardness of their hearts. And yeah, they're Christians. Sure they are. Because salvation is by grace through faith. But here, keep in mind the point of the chapter is what? Mercy to be shown. Mercy. This woman is being shown mercy. And with that writing of divorcement, she won't have to go through the stoning process. But Jesus kind of straightened it all out, didn't he? When he talked about divorce, he says, "Whosoever shall put away his wife except it be for sexual sin and shall marry another commits adultery. Whoso marries her which is put away does commit adultery." Now, so, we do have people regularly come and say, "I have grounds for divorce. It's like they've been wanting this for the last 10 years. Oh, praise God, I found this little thing in Scripture right here, just three words, and I've got grounds for divorce. What do you suggest I do?" Work it out. That's what we suggest you do. You see, divorce is not commanded, it is permitted. But I already read your verse before. I read you out of Matthew, and it was in Malachi too. And what did it say? "For the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that he hates putting away." So we always figure there should be a way to work this out if both of you are Christians. And that's usually what we encourage people to do. And of course, I can't answer every one of your questions, because then that brings up about 1.5 million questions. Because I have never yet seen one case that was identical to the other case. So far in my life, there have never been two the same. But there are some instances that turn out the same. For instance, what if there is violence in that home? What if the wife's beating that husband up every night? You laugh. I've been to calls to domestic violence where women just beat that man to where he needs to be hospitalized and he won't hit her back. But he's scared to call the police because it's embarrassing. Oh yeah, it happens. It happens on both sides. We just only hear the news about the one side. Everybody else is embarrassed about the other side. Nobody talks about it. There's a lot of things we don't talk about in this country. That's one of them. Domestic violence. What happens if there's violence going on? Okay, write this down. Ready? Get out. That's two words. Get out. Get out of and away from. Get to a place where you're safe and then work it out. Begin the process of working this out. Make sense? And listen to Jesus. Trust me when I tell you, if you will do it God's way, you will be glad you did. If you will listen to Him, you will be glad you did. There's a way that seems right unto man, but it ends in death. So for the mercy that's involved here, Moses gave them this command. Now we go on. What if they get married and they actually like each other? It's a rare verse, but it's true. Look. When a man has taken a new wife, He shall not go out to war. Not suggesting that he's already just entered one, like somebody has taught, but that he should not go out to war. Neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home one full year, and shall cheer up his wife while he is, which he has taken. Oh boy. Cheer up your wife. Tell her jokes. What it means is this young couple needs time to adjust to each other. They think they're in love. And so they need time to really adjust to one another. That's what he's saying. So you're not going to send this young fella off to war for his first year. They're going to just get time together, figure each other out. I like how God is just, he's positive. 1 year? Yeah. How many of you married 1 year had it all figured out? Oh, I'm the only one? Whoa. I just figured out, you don't say nothing, man. Go to work. But that's God wanted to be sure that they had time to learn, to get to know one another and to adjust to one another. Verse 6 says, no man shall take the nether or the upper millstone to pledge, for he has taken a man's life to pledge. Okay, now, millstones. Notice we're talking about mercy here. We start with the man and the woman, and there's difficulties going on. There's mercy shown, and we're learning how to deal with that. Jesus helped straighten us out a little bit on it. Now, you see mercy in the fact that these two young people have gotten married. You're going to give them about a year before you really put this guy out in the fields and whatever else he needs to do. Mercy. Give them time to adjust one another, get to know one another. Now, mercy on someone that maybe owes you some money or has gone into debt somehow, some way. And he says this, no man shall take the nether or the upper millstone to pledge, for he takes a man's life to pledge. You know, sometimes you need collateral for a loan or for different situations. And what he says is, don't take the millstone. Millstones were used daily in homes all throughout Israel. And they would grind the grains to prepare their meals, the breads and the meals. Now, if you took the millstone for collateral, you would literally be taking away a person's daily bread. They wouldn't have any ability to feed themselves even for that day. Which would not be merciful at all, would it? What we're reading here is, you do something like that, you're literally taking that person's life for collateral because they can't feed their family. They can't take care of their family. You wouldn't do that. You'd be merciful and figure out some other way to work out this collateral stuff. Right? Make sense? Verse 7. Oh, wait. Let me. I've got a statement written here. Let me read it to you. It's this, in the spirit of mercy and the spirit of generosity that one lends to the poor in the first place. True? If a guy's needing some help, and him and his family, you're going to lend to them, you're going to take collateral, but you're not going to take something that's going to cause him to not be able... You know, let's just put it into an American. The guy is an auto mechanic, and he needs a little bit of help, and so you come along and say, all right, we'll help you, we'll loan you this much money, and we'll take all your tools. Okay, well, what have you done? Okay, you do this for a living. You work on taxes. All right, we'll loan you this money, but we're taking your computer, or we're taking all your filing cabinets. See, in other words, you're taking away their ability to function. It's not merciful. It's not logical. It's not kind. If you're going to help them, what he's saying is help them. If a man be found stealing, verse 7, any of his brethren of the children of Israel, make merchandise of him or sells him, then the thief shall die. You shall put away evil from among you. Kidnapping. You shouldn't steal other people. You would think that Christians wouldn't have to be told that. Now we laugh. I try to make these things funny because at least you will wake back up. And sometimes it'll stick in your head because you'll say, oh, that made me laugh. I remember that. You know, we shouldn't steal people. Hear that? Parents who have divorced and starting to use the children as little pawns and starting to, I'm going to steal the children, I'm going to take them, and we're going to go to another country, and you're going to never see them again, and they're going to grow up, and they're going to become Muslim. Right? Wait a minute. Kidnapping, stealing people, was very common in the Middle East. It still is. It's very common over in Africa. It sounds like it's very common in the United States of America. Stealing people. A little girl the other night in Spokane almost got stolen. When you go to the malls, it's very common around holiday times that children get stolen. And some of them never seen again. That you just saw that they found that little six-year-old girl today that was stolen. Her parents moved after the September 11th attack. Her parents moved into New Jersey to get into more of an open area out of the big city. And someone stole their daughter. Kidnapped her daughter, and she was found today safe. Kidnapping was very common in those days. And since the kidnapper was depriving a person of his own freedom, then the kidnapper, when caught, was to be put to death. Just as though he had taken another individual's life. Notice, everybody, these verses condemn slavery. See that? I'll read it to you again, or this verse. If a man be found stealing any of his brethren of the children of Israel and makes merchandise of them, sells them, or holds them for ransom or puts them to work somehow, or sells them, then that thief shall die. You shall put away evil from among you. That person should get the death penalty. Off with their heads. For anybody who steals other people. So Christian, I'm convinced there's a better way to handle your children. So you pray about it and you think about it. Don't be stealing people. And slavery is condemned. Slavery of any kind is condemned by the Lord. Verse 8 says, excuse me, take heed in the plague of leprosy, that you observe diligently and do according to all that the priests, the Levites, shall teach you. As I commanded them, so you shall observe to do. Remember that the Lord thy God did, or what the Lord thy God did unto Miriam, by the way, after that you were come forth out of Egypt. All right, now he's talking about diseases. Leprosy is mentioned, and that covers a few different diseases. Notice, instead of repeating the law, instead of repeating the way to handle leprosy, he simply says, remember what you were commanded. And of course, we remember that from Leviticus 13 and 14, don't we? What you were commanded to do about leprosy, you can find that in Leviticus 13 and 14. Instead of repeating that, he just simply says, take heed in the plague of leprosy, that you observe diligently, do according to all the priests and the Levites shall teach you, as I commanded them, there in Leviticus, so you shall observe to do. And remember what the Lord thy God did unto Miriam, by the way, after that you were come forth out of Egypt. What happened to Miriam, remember? They're supposed to handle these diseases a certain way. And if you go back to Leviticus 13, Leviticus 14, you're going to find, here's how you recognize the disease. Here's what you do to the individual that has the disease. You quarantine them. It keeps the disease from spreading. And it's kind of teaching you how to be merciful to the people. You know, if somebody has this disease, you want to keep them away from others, or the disease is going to spread throughout the whole community, right? Makes sense. This is kind of where our doctors learn much of what they learn. You read it in the Bible here. How are you going to quarantine them? And so he says, you know how to do it? Take a look at Leviticus 13 and 14, you'll see. And of course, keep in mind what happened to Miriam. And remembering what happened to Miriam would help everybody to remember what God thinks. Remember, Miriam was struck with leprosy because of why? She opposed Moses. Remember that? She made fun of him and didn't like the wife he had chosen. And she kind of was feeling like she ought to be just as important. And remember, God struck her with leprosy. And what did they do with her? Put her outside the camp. They went along with how you do it in Leviticus 13 and 14. And then God, of course, healed her. Moses prayed and God healed her. But he says, now keep that in mind when you're headed into the promised land like that. There's a couple of times more he's going to tell us. Keep in mind what God did before. Of course, you and I would do that anyway, I'm sure. Verse 10 says, when you lend your brother anything, you shall not go into his house to fetch his pledge. You shall stand outside And the man to whom you doth lend shall bring out the pledge outside to you. I like that. What are we talking about? These two verses really protect your rights and your own privacy in your own home. Isn't that interesting? Protected the borrower's rights to his own property. The lender couldn't just walk in because he's loaning you something. He couldn't just walk in and take what he wanted for collateral or take what he wanted as earnest or whatever. He couldn't just walk into your home. You had privacy. And you're being merciful to the individual here. You're saying, you keep your privacy. If you're going to strike a deal with an individual, you go on into your house, you agree on something, go on into your house, bring it back out to him. The lender should not just walk in and take what he wants. Okay? Those verses are easy to understand. And if the man be poor, sleep with his pledge. You think, what does that mean? In any case, thou shalt deliver him the pledge again when the sun goes down, that he may sleep in his own clothing, and bless thee, and it shall be righteousness unto thee before the Lord thy God. If the borrower is poor, but he really needs some help, and we've seen that, haven't we? Sometimes when people, they just don't have anything, but they really need a hand. Well, imagine the borrower is poor. What does the borrower have? Nothing but what, possibly? The clothes on his back, on her back. True? And if you say, all right, I'll make you a deal. I'll give you this food for today, or food for the next couple of days to feed your family, but give me your coat, or give me that shirt you're wearing. It's a nice shirt. I'll take that as collateral, because I want to make sure I get paid back. And the person poor, if they really need the help, they might give you that coat or that shirt off their back, hand it to you. But what if it's cold? You notice what God says? Don't keep that all night. Think about it. If it's going to be a cold night, return that before nightfall and say, you know what, I got to thinking about it. It's cold, you're probably going to need this. You know, you don't have a lot of clothes. Here, I'm giving you your coat back. I'm giving you this shirt back. You know, I'll come get it in the morning or something. We'll work out some other kind of deal. You're going to show kindness. Notice that? Notice that there's mercy all through this chapter. You're still going to work out deals. God isn't saying, okay, the poor can get away with murder and they don't have to pay. No, you're still going to work out a deal with them, but you're going to be kind. You're going to be merciful. We're going to take care of each other while we're doing it. Is this making sense to you? Do this. Which one? Sure. You did all that I did. You notice this way the lender was showing mercy and kindness. And he was also, think about this, loving his neighbor as himself. I'll take that coat for this. And they give you the coat and you get the thing. You know it's cold. I'll tell you what. You keep this. We'll work out something. We'll figure it out. You're showing what? You're showing mercy. You're showing kindness. You're really loving your neighbor as yourself, which is what God would want us to do, isn't it? Yeah. Verse 14 says, you shall not oppress a hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in the land within thy gates. At this day, you shall give him his hire. Or at his day, I'm sorry, you should give him his hire. Neither shall the sun go down upon it, for he is poor, and sets his heart upon it, lest he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto you. And so we can learn from this, that's pretty simple too. The poor that have absolutely nothing. Some of them, when they work, they need to be paid now, not at the end of the month. Make sense? I mean, they are so hurting that what they're working for, they need it now. Now, in our day and age, people are used to being paid by the week or bi-weekly every other week or by the month. And what he's saying is don't hold back the wages. The poor need to be paid when they need it. They're counting on the money today, not a month from now. Some of them can't survive without it. And so he's saying to you that are employers, think about it. Think about your people. Think about what they need. Think about what's going on around them. Think about how their family's doing. Take these things into consideration. Be kind. Be merciful. Be thoughtful about that. Remember, he says, Israel was oppressed by Pharaoh. Remember that? They were back in Egypt, and Pharaoh didn't care. And they cried out to God for help. Didn't they? Isn't that what he says here? He says, lest he cry against, the bottom of verse 15, lest he cry against you unto the Lord, and it be sin unto you. Remember, God listens. And when the children of God cried out to Pharaoh, or cried out to God against Pharaoh, excuse me, God said to Moses, I've heard the cry of my people. I want you to go and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. I've heard their cry. And Moses went and said, let them go. And Pharaoh said, I'm not doing it. And plagues came down. God didn't just sit there and wait. Notice, once you cry out, you can believe God's going to begin to move. So as an employer, you make sure your employees aren't crying out to God against you. Or at least they're not crying out in honesty against you, right? We're going to be merciful that way. That's what we're reading. Verse 16 says, the fathers shall not be put to death for the children. I like that. Neither shall the children be put to death for the fathers. Every man shall be put to death for his own sin. Okay, why not? Each is to die for his or her own sins. You know, and that's just plain and simple and logical. Each person, God says, the soul that sins it shall die. Each person will die. You're not going to be put to death for the sins of your children, is what he's saying. And that's the way it's going to be when you enter into the promised land. Verse 17, you shall not pervert the judgment of the stranger, nor of the fatherless, nor take a widow's clothing for pledge. But you shall remember that you were a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed you from there. Therefore I command you to do this thing. Strangers, orphans, and widows. You'll see those mentioned a lot throughout Scripture. Strangers, orphans, and widows. God takes care of them and expects you and I to as well. And strangers and orphans and widows were easy targets. I mean, think about it. You got a stranger, he comes into town and he's looking for a place to stay and looking for food. I mean, you could take advantage of a person like that or a guy like that or a girl like that pretty easily. Boaz could have done that with Ruth. Or you got orphans. They don't have anyone to defend them or protect them. You could take advantage of them. You could oppress the orphans. And the same with widows. No one's there to care for this lady and she could be taken advantage of. And God says, don't do that. No one stands in their defense. Keep in mind that we read verses 7 to 18. God himself will defend the stranger, the fatherless, and the widows. And God will make things right. So you and I want to remember that and be merciful and be kind. When you cut down your harvest in the field, in your field, those of you that are farmers, working in vineyards and things, and you forgot a sheaf in the field, you shall not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the orphan, the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive tree and you're hitting the thing, trying to knock all the olives off, don't go over the boughs or the branches twice. Whatever falls the first time through, that's it. It shall be for the stranger, for the orphan, and for the widow, what's left on the tree. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, don't glean it afterwards. Pass on through, pick all the grapes you're going to pick, and leave the rest. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. And you shall remember that you were a bondman in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I commend you to do these, to do this thing. Notice, everybody, and you farmers, as you're coming through the field, leave some of it on purpose. Don't get all the grain. Don't get everything that you've got. Leave some of it there. For who? The stranger, the orphans, and the widows. As you're coming, you're coming through your olive orchard, bunch of olive trees. You got a whole herd of trees, and you know acres of it. And you go through, and you got your olive pickers, and you hire these guys and girls, and they come on through and pick it. And then you don't go back and check to see how much they left. Make sure they leave some. Just make sure they leave some. What for? For the stranger, for the orphans, and for the widows. When you go through the grape vineyards, you walk through and you start to collect the grapes. What do you do on purpose? Leave some. Who for? Go ahead. Stranger, the orphans, and the widows. Why? That was Israel's welfare system. That was the welfare system. What a smart thing to do. If America had that kind of sense, we'd be in better shape. We don't have that kind of sense, but God's pretty smart. See, these people were not reduced to having to beg or to having to take handouts. They could work and earn something. Notice that? You see it in the book of Ruth. Of course, she turns out to be a beauty, and so he leaves bushels. That's a whole nother story, though. He's doing what the law wants him to do. He's out of the kindness of his heart. He's leaving tons. She could have opened her own farm with what he left. Okay, you could see something's going on here, but still, they didn't stoop to begging or taking handouts. They could work and earn their keep. Doesn't that sound like a very smart thing to do? Instead of just handing someone money, they're going to now go out and earn. They're going to feel better about it. They're going to be productive. They're going to work hard. And the harder they work, the more they're going to be able to do. And you've got everybody doing what they ought to be doing, taking care of each other without handing out. You know, I hear this unemployment stuff and it amazes me. I don't understand it, but it amazes me. I mean, guys tell me, oh yeah, I've got it for 6 months and I'll get it all 6 months. And I say, how do you do that? Well, all you got to do is prove to them you're looking for work. Just don't find any. I think that almost sounds like you're dishonest. Oh no, brother, I'm saved. It's just that I got it coming to me. That's crazy. You mean they give you money for doing nothing all week? You should be in a ministry. At least you'd be doing something. So unemployment doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. I know some of you that need it. It makes sense to you. But I wouldn't stay on it long. Man, I would want to be doing something, wouldn't you? Anything. Just doing something to earn my own way. Wouldn't you? And that's how the welfare system in Israel worked. And you see Ruth go out there, and she is able, well, with a little help, of course, but she did the work herself. And she collected, and they ate. And they ate well. The stranger, she was the stranger. But it also includes the fatherless and the widows. How else are they going to take care of themselves? They could go sit, as you see in Jesus' day, beggars. They could go sit on street corners and beg. But there was a system in place. The only people that would beg would usually be those who couldn't walk, couldn't see, couldn't function somehow, and they had no other alternative. Other than that, God set up a way to where we could even take care of the stranger and the fatherless and the widows. We want to show mercy to one another, husbands and wives. We want to show mercy to the young newlyweds. We want to show mercy even when someone is in our debt, owing us. We want to show mercy. We want to show kindness. We want to love our neighbors as ourselves. We want to do things that are right. We want to be good businessmen and good businesswomen, but we want to show a kindness and a mercy and a love to our neighbors. Especially, we're told in the New Testament, especially to those that are the household of faith. Especially to other Christians. Now, before we close, one of the things that you and I as Christians ought to be is honest. And I've had guys and girls tell me, I hire Christians and they never do a good job. You know, I hire Christians and they rip you off more than anybody. Shouldn't be said about us, should it? No. Should be said, I hired a Christian and they did the very best. You couldn't make them quit working. When at 5 o'clock came, you had to tie them up to make them stop. Instead of them telling me, well, you know, this guy comes to your church, right? Right. Well, you know, we hired him. He's supposed to work till 5. He's usually gone by 3:30. Don't let them say that about you. Work till 6. Make them force you to go away. And it's only minimum wage. And hey, listen, do your very best. Work hard. But be kind to one another. love one another. Love your neighbor as yourself. Think about how you would want it done to you. And then, of course, do it to others first. The golden rule, you know, when Jesus says there in the Sermon on the Mount, whatsoever you would have others do unto you, or do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's how he words it. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The language says you do it first. You are the one that steps out and does it. If you want someone to show you friendliness, you be friendly. If you want someone to show you mercy, you be merciful. If you want someone to show you kindness, then you be kind. And then, of course, we learn later on, if you're kind and kindness doesn't come back, what do? You still be kind anyway. Heaping coals of fire on their head, they'll burn. Pray about these issues. Go back, and it's a short chapter. Read it. Look at the mercy that's involved. Look at the care and the detail that God takes with His people. You're going to go into the promised land. You're going to be surrounded by this. Well, just keep in mind, be merciful to each other. This is going to happen. It's going to be that some will be poor. Here's how we can handle them. Here's how we can help them. Here's how we can love them. There are going to be some that won't be able to the strangers, the fatherless and the widows, they won't be able to do certain things. So help them. But let me read to you what it says. You shall remember, verse 22, you were a bondman in the land of Egypt, therefore I command you to do this thing. Remember that there was a time when you needed help. Remember that? And you were servants under the heavy hand of Pharaoh. Remember what it felt like to be mistreated, to be judged, to be crushed. And don't do that to others. Love each other. Okay, let's bow our heads.